You're listening to A Views and Brews, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas. Find out how you can join us for a live show at the Cactus at cactuscafe.org.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cactus Cafe. Gosh, it is so good to see you, and it's so good to be back with Jazz at the Cactus. Our last show was in December, when it was nice and cold out.
That's true.
Not anymore. I did. You could talk in the mic, you know.
Miss Rebecca had a baby between then and
now. Baby Jack.
So we're gonna pass pictures around.
Okay.
And that's why you're all here.
To see baby pictures. Well, thank you guys for coming. Here with me tonight to talk about a Jazz and the Art of Mental Health is Rabbi and jazz historian Neil Blumhoff. Welcome.
Thanks, Rebecca.
I am ridiculously ridiculed by the KUTX team, by the Jazz and the Art of, you know, and tonight Matt Riley was like, Jazz and the Art of colonoscopies. Like, what are you going to do? Like, how do you choose these things? And so I will ask you,
sure.
Jazz and the Art of Mental Health, where does this come from?
Well, thanks, Matt, for giving me my idea for August. So excited.
I think it'll be fun.
Could be anyway. So, you know, I was really thinking, I've had a long time to think about this.
Yeah.
So, you know, while you were doing your thing. It's a cute baby, by the way. Jack.
He is exceptionally cute.
He's all right. Yeah. He's nice. Good kid.
Yeah.
No, he's sweet. So I was thinking a lot about, like, the mystique of a lot. And I like the art of, because that's what I do. It's part of, so that's not going away.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to talk a little bit about mental illness and mental health. May has been the mental health month. And I was just thinking of a way of linking music that I love and people that I love and respect and really having a chat, not just about their image, but about real struggles that they have and by extension that we would have and that things that maybe we don't talk about and things that keep us up at night and things that are maybe beyond our control, and to recognize too that just as jazz is mythologized, which we'll talk about in a minute, there's so little that we know about mental health and about mental illness too. And I just wanted to bring that to attention for tonight. So that's what that's about.
Well, I think it's beautiful. I was just listening to a lecture by Slavoj Žižek, you know.
As you do.
As I want to do.
Right.
And
you have that for the baby as well, right?
Well, I have to get it to bed somehow. So he was saying, you know, the new opium of the masses. One is expertise. Mm-hmm. Like that's an opium, you know, this fetishizing of the expert. Another is actual opium. So there are real problems now. I mean, we have like real serious issues with, you know, opioids and drugs and things that are numbing and dulling our everyday life. And so talking about mental health is really important right now.
I think so. And speaking specifically about the opioid crisis and the culpability of, you know, industry and of others to recognize that that is a plague among us and just to have us know that we're not alone. And in my day work, that's actually a lot of what I do, a lot of speaking with and sitting with people who are overwhelmed, as many of us are from time to time, and to recognize that this is not just somebody else, but in the song titles and in the ways that we're going to discuss this and listen and appreciate beautiful music, we realize that it's part of us as well. We fetishize and we glamorize and stigmatize all at the same time this idea of mental health or addiction. And I just would rather have us, rather than have it be on the margin, to recognize that it's just part of our life.
And, you know, thinking also about the history of mental health, it was interesting to think about, like, the 1600s, 1700s, the idea of the court jester, you know, and speaking truth to power, and the fool, and the place of those who were considered outside of the norm. And that changed a lot in the 1700s and the 1800s. And So bring us kind of up to the beginning of jazz. Where are we with mental health in this country, and who's kind of how did jazz and the idea of mental health come together?
Well, I think they come together right in the beginning of what jazz is, and I think it's a really beautiful juxtaposition. I think we're going to open with a particular melody that is attributed, and just like the murky origins of jazz, mental health too is not very well understood. Mental illness is not well understood. So there is in New Orleans, before Louis Armstrong, before King Oliver, there was a cornetist, a trumpet player named Buddy Bolden. And it's just interesting that the movie just came out too. I was thinking about this long before that. It's a movie called Bolden that I guess is on Amazon.
Has anyone seen it? Movie Bolden? No?
But
it's phenomenal.
I haven't seen it yet, so I can only imagine what happens. But he lived, but he had a very difficult life. Buddy Bolden was committed to what was called at the time the Insane Asylum of Louisiana in 1907, and that's where he lived his whole life. He was born in 1877, and he died in 1931. So he essentially had 30 years of being incarcerated in an insane asylum. And he is considered to be the grandfather, if you will, or the progenitor of jazz in this country. And I think it's a very interesting thing. So eventually we're going to get to the first tune, which is really great. And I've always wanted to sing this tune. And the lyrics are actually written by Jelly Roll Morton. And it was recorded in 1938 with Alan Lomax, who was a student here at the University of Texas and taught here. But he represents, I think, Buddy Bolden, the mythical origins of jazz. And there's a great debate, which I've read a lot of the articles about. You can go to the Hogan Jazz Archives at Tulane University. Nobody? It's pretty great. Nobody? It's great stuff. And you can read a lot about Buddy Bolden and his orchestra. And you can see a particular press clipping of Buddy Bolden unfortunately attacking his mother with a water pitcher in 1906, and then he's committed to the mental hospital. And this tune is called Funky Butt, and it's also called Buddy Bolden's Blues. And again, Jelly Roll Morton wrote the lyrics, but it's really a kind of a commentary of how we might post on our Instagram account. Right?
Oh, I don't, but I know that you breathe.
That's a thing
does.
That happens.
That's a thing. That right? Debbie, my intern, is right there. She does it.
Okay, that's really great. I hear. So that this song represents the signs of the times, that the lyrics, and there's many different versions of the lyrics, reflect the social and cultural commentary of what was going on. So there's a lot of various lyrics, and I think it's... The story was that they were in a place in New Orleans called the Oddfellows Home. It was a public, and it was really hot. There was no air conditioning, and people were dancing and enjoying, and it was really, really smelly. And this song was called Funky Butt because it smells. So I think it's a very playful but also a very serious way of just the human condition. It's like we all put on our fancy clothes or whatever, and we're going out. We like to, you know. But, you know, we're human, and just like the mental condition is human, you know, we smell also. At least some of us do. And I think that the overlaying the origin of the myth of jazz, of how we mystify mental health, I think it's a really interesting connection. So we're gonna play this Funky Butt.
Let's do it.
Is that all right?
I think so.
All right, so it's we're going to do a beautiful band is here, and the lyrics are actually pretty funny. Again, I just love that Rabbi and Jazz is. I'm just getting so excited to sing these lyrics. So we're introducing. It's so glad to have everybody back. Brandon Temple on drums, everybody. John Fremgen on bass. The incomparable Red Young on piano. Michael Malone on saxophone. Yeah. And also helping with the chairs. Thanks, Mike. Andre Hayward on trombone. Thank you. And Adrian Ruiz on trumpet. So... This is called Buddy Bolden's Blues, or I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, it's called Funky Butt. We'll see what happens. say. Dirty, nasty, sticky butt, take it away. You're terrible, you're awful, take it away. Oh, Mr. Bolden, play. That window and let that bad smell out. Open up that window and let that funky air out. Oh, I thought I heard Buddy Bolden shout. I thought I heard Judge Fogarty say, 30 days in the market, take him away. Give him a good broom to sweep with, take him away. I thought I heard him say, I thought I heard Buddy Bolden repeat. Or I can play it sweet. You know I lost my mind on Rampart Street. I thought I heard Buddy Bolden repeat. Thank you. So that's the beginning of jazz, everybody. Steeped in mental illness. So beautiful players, right? Mike Malone on saxophone. Andre Hayward on trombone. Adrian Ruiz on trumpet. Red Young on piano. John Fremgen on bass. Brandon Temple, BT, on the drums.
Rabbi Neil Blumhoff on vocals. Woo! That's a fantastic way to start.
That's fun.
I must say.
We do that at bar mitzvahs.
You know. Open the window. Yeah. My God.
Believe it. 13-year-olds, 100%.
You know what I love? I love about that the idea that it's this is like industrialization, you know, and all of the machinery coming into the world, and there's this idea that you know, machines will take over. Right? And this is getting back to this fundamental human experience, mm-hmm. which is like, it stinks in here. You know?
It's funky, but
I love
butt.
That. And I mean, I think we're asking the same questions today, like, what makes us human?
For sure. And that's that song dates 1899, depending on who you ask, 1899, 1903, 1906. It's one of the first.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, the words come later, but... Yeah. But that's the melody, mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun.
It's really phenomenal. And if you haven't seen Bolden, which I take it a lot of you have not, well, none of you have, but it's really good. It's a really great...
And that arrangement, just to give a shout out to Wynton Marsalis and his wonderful album that he put together called Bolden, soundtrack for that movie.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So let's, you know, move on a little bit. We're talking about jazz and mental health, and we get to this period in the U.S., in the world, which is like World War II, right? And everything changes, especially when it comes to what we're thinking, what we're feeling, the art of the period. As we were talking today, we talked about the beginnings of lysergic acid diethylamide, and
anybody? Nobody? It's all right. It's the after party.
Alternative ways of thinking. and it brings us to the idea of, you know, how did these myths start forming between what jazz is doing, which is taking us away from the everyday, the time periods that constrain us and that force us into different regimens. And jazz is taking us away, and other things are taking us away too, and they're kind of culminating and forming an experience of their own. So talk a little bit about that.
So it's great. So thank you. And that was LSD, by the way, just saying this thing. So the beginning of jazz, and obviously jazz itself, was considered to be a dance music and a very social, as you said beautifully, a music of socialization, where people would come together and get together and be very human about all of those things. And I want to concentrate on the next two artists who are certainly in the World War II period, which is known commercially as bebop, of Charlie Parker and Bud Powell. And they played together, and they... wanted to, as you said, change time. And they wanted to redo sort of jazz, this music, in a very different kind of image, to redo the time signatures, to redo expectation of dance music. And to quote somebody we're going to play and feature in just a few moments after, Thelonious Monk, he said, we wanted a music, speaking of bebop, we wanted a music that they couldn't play, whoever they are. So it was a much more insider kind of like, what is my voice? What is my role? And certainly during World War II and after World War II, as we see the horror of what we're capable of as human beings, I think people wanted to establish a particular kind of voice and to say that they mattered, as opposed to being a cog in the machine. So much of what bebop was a music for art, a music for intellectual attainment, as opposed to just feeling that you're an entertainer. You know, just the afterthought, the soundscape, the sonority that happens so everything else can happen. You know, they want it to be taken on a particular value, as we all do. And so for Charlie Parker specifically, you may know more of his tragic life, but you may not know that he was on tour in the Ozarks, Nobody? Ozarks? Okay. It's a good show. So the Ozarks, and there was a car accident, and he broke 3 ribs and fractured his spine, and then he was, of course, prescribed what? Pain medication, opioids, which turned into heroin and alcohol. And he was committed in 1945 to the Camarillo State Mental Hospital for 6 months. And also, you may not know that he had a 3-year-old daughter, Pri, who died. And just thinking about that, this is the real, I mean, we sort of characterize, you know, our heroes, whoever they might be. And we think of Charlie Parker, again, that allure of the jazz, you know, instability, that energy that he, but he suffered. He suffered physically, and he suffered in his family as well. And he, ultimately in 1954, he died in 1955, he attempted suicide twice. So I just want to bring, as we begin to think about him and Bud Powell in a minute, just think about, you know, the people that we know, and it might be people sitting next to us, might be people ourselves that struggle with this kind of thing, struggle with physical pain, struggle with limitation, struggle with loss in families, and struggle with a sense of feeling that if it's all worth it or not. And, you know, it would be interesting beyond this conversation. I know this is, it's not a typical, like, what's up? You know, like, this is a serious matter. To really think about and discuss with people who we trust and love about people who we've known who've taken their lives. And I think that that's a very important aspect of healing and hoping, which is what this music, and the rest of this music, that was a nice piece that we began with, Funky Butt. The rest of these are ballads and introspective, which I asked to do in a particular way. So that's called All the Things You Are, which is what we're going to feature, a Charlie Parker tune.
Well, I also think it's really interesting in the Bolden film. If you even just watch the trailer, there was this idea of putting Bolden in front of a white audience. You know, we're going to put jazz in front of a white audience, and so we're going to make it, you know, part of kind of a cultural conversation that's not happening with everybody right now. And I think bebop is, and I don't want to be too presumptuous, but like reclaiming jazz, you know, for what it can do for oneself, for a musician, you know, and well, for the people who are playing it.
We've done Views and Brews on this, you know, that it began as a very insider language, Admittance Playhouse in the Harlem, of people playing after hours, going after their gigs, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and just wanting to be together. And again, recovering that sense of language with people that you trust, that you don't have to be performative, you don't have to be the court jester for people. And I think that that's a very important aspect of what this music originally was intended to be.
Yeah. You know, and there aren't too many places where just in daily life, all of us can kind of have the backstage experience, you know, like being whoever we are to each other without really having to perform, especially with, you know, social media and no real private space anymore. There, it's very difficult to just let down and not have performance, you know, not have a performing face, for example.
Sure, and it's very exhausting, too, knowing that everything we type or tweet or Instagram, you know, is just out there, and we'll never, even the Snapchats, by the way, kids, it's all going to be out there. It's still out there. There was a really great meme that I saw recently. Mm-hmm. I saw a meme.
Speaking of.
Right. So I don't remember the names, but the royal families is Harry and Meghan. Is that somebody?
Yes.
And the other
course.
One is. Harry, Meghan, Markle. Yeah, thanks. That's just the first name.
Debbie knows.
And Andrew and. What's the other one?
Prince Philip, Andrew.
Andrew is married to who?
Fergie. No, that was back in the 80s.
So there's two brothers,
those
right?
Diana days.
There's two brothers. One's been. William and what's the other one?
Mary.
Kate. So William and Kate. So there's
oh,
this.
That's it.
I don't know. Thanks. I jazz guy. I'm not royal guy. So there's a meme of William and Kate and of Harry and Meghan, right?
Yeah.
And it shows that Harry and Meghan, who just got married recently, whatever, they're sort of looking at each other longingly and it's so beautiful, and it says before.
Yeah.
And then and it shows William and Kate. He's like reading the newspaper. She's on her phone. They're like, and it's like after. You know, just the idea of, you know, you perform to get noticed, to get what you want. We talked beautifully about the sense of cognizant manipulation that we have.
Yeah.
Ways that we use playfully and seriously each other in order to get, you know, what we want to do and to have a good life. But ultimately, all that stuff may or may not last. And I think that that's right. And I think being in that and recognizing that the myths that we set out for ourselves are not necessarily sustainable, whether it's our job or our relationship or our identities, you know, it's all, everything too shall pass, to quote some scripture, you know? But I'm just saying. But I'm just thinking that, you know, with whether it's Charlie Parker or Bud Powell or anybody, recognizing that you don't want to be taken advantage of, and realize that the world moves on and you still have to be who you need to be. And that's a really difficult position to be in, especially if you're suffering.
Yeah, definitely.
Can we talk a little bit about Bud Powell?
I think we should talk a little bit about Bud Powell.
Is that okay? So It Could Happen to You is the song that we're going to... So knowing that this is not just somebody else... Bud Powell was called the Charlie Parker of the piano. And in 1945, he had a gig in Philadelphia. He was drunk, and he was walking, and he was beaten by railroad police. And he was incarcerated, and he had severe headaches after that. And he was hospitalized at Bellevue, a state psychiatric hospital, for 2.5 months. And in 1947, is an inmate... of these state hospitals of persecution and racism, it didn't go well. And he ultimately had electroconvulsive therapy, and he was arrested a few times, and he was ultimately given medication for schizophrenia. And he too, Bud Powell, who lived till 1966, he had a brother, Richie Powell, in 1956, who was killed in a car crash, along with Clifford Brown. So to take all of that, he ultimately died of tuberculosis, malnutrition, and alcoholism. And he moved to Paris and was taken care of a wonderful woman named Altivia Buttercup Edwards. But just the suffering and the ways that sort of he tried to make it work, I think I'd like to, just before we move to what's next, just to feature those two songs, All the Things You Are, as we front and sort of again put on our best face, and It Could Happen to You, because... nobody's immune to tragedy and difficulty, and we need each other, and that's why we do things like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So we're going to play that right now?
Is that all right?
Let's do it.
Cool. So we're going to invite our wonderful ensemble back up to play these beautiful tunes. We're going to continue to entertain you, believe it. So we're just getting through this stuff. It'll be so entertaining. So we'll get to it. All the Things You Are, It Could Happen to You.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.